This past year, a friend of mine lost her son to suicide. It rocked their whole existence. It shook my foundation as I wondered what had happened to make this sweet, fun-loving boy feel the need to take his life. Unfortunately, I'm sure many of you listeners have stories similar to mine. Many of us know families who have lost a loved one to suicide. The stresses and pressures faced by our youth today are unprecedented. As intentional parents, what are we doing to help our children develop the emotional resilience they need to deal with these extreme pressures? In today's episode, Corinne Kendall is back to share her insights as a junior high counselor on how we can help our children deal with anxiety, depression, and even suicidal tendencies. Whether it's one of our own children or a child of someone we know, we all have a responsibility to understand what our youth are faced with and what we can do to help. Join us in this important podcast as we discuss what we as intentional parents can do to help our children.
Welcome to the My Teaching Matters podcast, where our mission is to help you, the intentional parent, to teach your children in such a way that they can personally experience the power of Jesus Christ while still at home.
Welcome, everybody, to My Teaching Matters podcast. I'm Leslie Johnson, and I'm here again with Corinne Kendall. So this is our second episode of our counseling session with Corinne. She is a high school counselor, or actually a middle school counselor. And she
junior
has been
high, yeah.
Junior high, okay. And she's been sharing with us some of the trends and the challenges and things that she has seen in even in these early ages of sixth grade to ninth grade. Is that kind of where you're at, Corinne?
Yes.
So today we were going to take it even a little bit deeper. We're going to look at some really tough challenges that our youth are having to deal with. Corinne, start us off and give us kind of an idea. We're going to talk about some tough stuff, some heavy stuff like anxiety and depression and even suicide today, because these things are some of the challenges that our kids are going to have to be faced with or see their friends being faced with. So Corinne, tell us a little bit about what you're seeing in the schools.
Okay, I want to start off by telling a story. There's a you know, with COVID and stuff, our schools shut down, and I have a particular student who is a current eighth grader, and this student was in our school last year as a seventh grader. She was actually one of our ambassadors, which is one of a leadership team in the school. She's a quieter student, and she was hesitant to even be an ambassador, but she said that she would do it, and she started doing really well, coming out of her shell, starting participating, and but then COVID hit, and her family has a lot of high-risk people in their family. And so as a family, they have decided to do distance learning this entire school year. So she's been doing really well with distance learning. The eighth grade team decided to give her an award for being a great distance learning student. And so myself and as a counselor, and then our principal and assistant principal, we went door to door. We went and gave out these awards to these students. And so just a little over a week ago, we went over to her house to give her this award. As she came to the door, her parents were out there with us already. And as she came to the door, she had so much anxiety and depression. She couldn't even stand up straight and look at us. She was hiding behind her parents, and it really hit me. It made me so sad that our kids are struggling. They may not be vocal about it, but there is, and I feel like there's so many worries out there. They hear of the school shootings. They hear of lately it's not school shootings, but shootings everywhere. They hear of COVID. So I feel like they're over inundated with with information on COVID, it's getting them so amped up and in high anxiety, and then the depression comes out. And it broke my heart to see the student who was doing so well just a year ago and to see where she's at now. It was like night and day.
Wow, that is scary. So obviously, you know, COVID, where we've all been hiding away, has not helped our children with some of becoming more resilient, emotionally resilient, and developing those skills that they need to deal with the world. What would you say are some other mitigating factors or contributing factors that are helping, or not really helping, but are causing some of these issues with our kids, this anxiety or depression?
You know, and you can't really pinpoint it on anything in particular, but I do think that you look at the social media. I think, you know, there's a lot to blame there. Kids are putting out their best front, and they're not putting out what they're struggling with. And so in their mind, what are they thinking? Their neighbor has the perfect life. Social media, and I think that's a huge issue. And just being in a junior high and high school, the language that these kids hear is atrocious.
Wow.
It is so heartbreaking. You may be shocked by the words that come out of these students' mouths. It is sad. It's sad to hear. And I think another thing that is really difficult is texting. And we see it so much. Kids are texting their friends or whatever in a bullying sort of way. They're saying very negative things about their friends. And I say friends in quotes because, like, that's not really how you treat your friends. But they're hiding. There's a lot of hiding behind the screen. People will say things differently if it's not face-to-face. So I think our kids are getting essentially bullied over the phone through text messaging. So
you know,
I think,
Corinne,
those things are all contributing.
As you were talking about that, I have my own personal experience to share, and I didn't even make the connection until you were just talking, but I have a little, a friend that has Down syndrome. She's just this little girl in our ward. She's not so little. She's like 21 or whatever, but in her mind, she's a young girl, you know, and, but she loves to text. She loves to text. And so we got in this texting pattern, and she texts me every day. And, it came a point that, I might have forgot to text her back, or I got busy doing something and couldn't give her the attention that she wanted. And she would get really frustrated with me. Mm-hmm. And she started texting me very mean text messages. And, you know, I am an adult, and I know that she's not. And yet those texts affected me. I would become frustrated. I would become mad. And I would think, you know what? We're supposed to be friends. Why is she talking to me like this? And so when you talk about that, I can imagine, you know, being an adult, I have these skills, or I should have these skills, that I shouldn't be affected by this. I should know better. And yet I still was. And so I can imagine that being 10, 11, 12, 13, 16, whatever it is, that can be really, really hard to deal with. And so I just, that point that, you know, I can see how anxiety could build because you want to have friends, and yet these friends are treating you so poorly, or like you said, quote, friends in quotes. And so, I can just see how that anxiety or that depression could increase from something like that. That's so interesting. You know, obviously this is a real thing. I think we all know people who suffer from anxieties, people who suffer from depression, people who are trying to deal with these issues, both children and adults. As parents, though, as we are trying to help teach our kids and trying to help prepare them with this emotional self-resiliency, what are some of the things that we should be looking for? What are some of the things that maybe we could do to help them before it gets out of hand?
Well, and you mentioned this. First off, I think we need to recognize it is absolutely a real thing. Mm. I think anxiety, depression. I remember growing up, and I have amazing parents, okay? But I think that they did not believe in anxiety or depression as being a mm-hmm. real thing. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was only my parents. I think it was generational. But I think as a parent, first off, recognize it is a real thing. There are people who genuinely have anxiety and depression. But then also, I do think anxiety it's a buzzword. Let's be real. Yep. It is a word that is thrown around so much. So I do not believe that every time it's used, that it is truly the case.
Mm.
I don't think it's like it's, you know, if that were the case, like every single person on the planet would be diagnosed with anxiety.
Well, we all have it.
Every one of us have anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
We can choose a number of things that I don't like calling people on the phone. I have anxiety when I have to make a phone call, which is really stupid.
I have the same thing.
But it is true. I hate it. So, with my job, I have to make phone calls. Do you know how I get over it? I just dial the phone and I have to answer. I have to talk at that point. I do think that it is overused.
But just make a comment here, because I like what you just said, that the way that I get over it is I just do it. And I think sometimes as mm-hmm. parents, we think that the right thing to do is to not help, you know, not push our kids to do difficult things. We want things to be easy for them. We want them to be happy. We don't want to create contention, or we don't want to create hardships. And maybe contention is the wrong word, but I don't think that that's God's plan. I mean, God sent us to earth to deal with trials. And it's through dealing with yeah. trials that we learn to overcome them. And as we overcome them, we gain more strength, we gain more the feeling that I can do this. And so by not helping our children do some of those difficult things, I think we're actually hurting them in the long run. So I think that that's something to think about. Now, mm-hmm. like you said, there are some cases where that's not the case. But in those early moments when our kids are starting to choose fearful things, as parents, we can help them see that, yeah, it was scary, but look what happens if you do it. Look how great it can be if you make that phone call. You can talk to a friend. You can, you know, you can yeah. ride that bike. It's scary, but if you get on there, look at how fast you can go and the places and things that you can see. And so I think that we need to recognize when it's just something that they need to be pushed to overcome, and maybe when it's something more.
Well, and that reminds me, and I know I told Leslie, I told you this story years ago,
mm-hmm.
but it reminds me, do you care if I share the story of Ryan?
I would love you to. Yeah.
That story just barely popped up in my head, and I feel like it goes along with what we're talking about. So my oldest son, he was probably 8 years old, 8 or 9, and he's very quiet, very to himself. Shy, quiet. And one day he had a neighbor kid come over and invite him over to the church to play football with a group of boys. And I was in the other room, so I knew someone came to the door, but I had no idea what it was about. So after the kid left and Ryan was here, and I'm like, Ryan, what was that about? And he's like, oh, it's so-and-so. He invited me over to the church to play football. And I said, well, what did you tell him? And he's like, well, I told him I didn't know if I could. And so I said, well, you can. You could have come and asked, and you can go. He's like, well, now I don't want to go. I said, well, why not? He's like, because they're not expecting me. They don't know that I'm coming, and I don't want to go now. And I just said, yeah, you're going to go. And he's like, no, I don't want to. They don't know I'm coming. And I said, as a parent, I just thought, this is ridiculous. He is letting his fear, his anxiety overtake him. And I said, nope, you are going to go over to the church and play football with those boys. And he started crying.
Oh.
And he started fighting back. He's like, I am not going. And I said, you are going to go out this house and go to the church and play football. And I was so adamant about it. I felt bad later. I'm kicking my son out of the door crying to go play with his friends. But in the end, he was there for like 2 hours, probably. He came home happy as could be. And I'm like, how was it? He's like, that was really fun. And I just thought, these kids need to be pushed to do hard things. And find out that it's okay. They can do it. So that's my personal story with my son.
I love that. That's a great story. And I think that we need, you know, as parents, that is our responsibility. Sometimes we have to do things that make our children think that we're so mean or that we're, unpleasant things. But because we can see the big picture, just like our Heavenly Father doesn't always take away the difficult things from us, nor should we take away other difficult things from our children, because that is how they learn and they grow and they develop the skills that they need to face the world. Because eventually they will be alone and they won't have you there pushing them out the door. They have to be able to know for themselves that I know this is hard, but I'm choosing to go out there because I know it will be good for me. And that doesn't happen if they don't have some help when they're young to recognize what can happen when they do the hard things.
Yeah. I like to say, like, we're giving our kids tools. We're filling up their tool belt, you know, giving them the tools they need to succeed and to be a citizen of society, you know?
So. Right. And by keeping, by doing all of that for them, by using the tools yourself and keeping all of that for them, eventually they are going to go out to society. That's what happens. And they're going to be without any tools in their tool belt. And so, that is a greater travesty than the little bit of pain of hitting your finger with a hammer when you're trying to learn how to do it.
Exactly.
That's a great analogy. Okay. So anything else that we can do? I mean, one is helping them do hard things, but is there anything else?
Yeah. I think another thing is, I think in the past, counseling therapy that's been almost looked down upon. It's had a negative connotation to some degree, but I do feel like it is warranted. There are situations where a counselor or therapist might be the answer. And so don't disregard that completely, whatever your personal stance is on that. I do think you may need to go to 2, 3, 4 different counselors, therapists to find someone, but I do think there is someone out there that can help. If it gets to a certain point, obviously, if it's, you know, if it's surface level, usually parents can deal with it, but there are cases that you do need, additional help.
Yeah.
So I think that's something, the interesting thing with therapy, with anxiety, with depression, there's not a one-size-fits-all solution. It's, you have to try different things. And I think we see that as parents. You can't treat one kid the same as the other, as your second kid and the third and so on. Everyone is an individual. They have different challenges. They have different strengths. So you have to recognize how, you know, what makes this kid tick and figure out how to help them according to that.
I like that. I think that's absolutely true. Yeah.
I do think that also, just in dealing with anxiety and depression, a lot of times when you start helping the kid recognize what's good in their life, I think that can be such a positive, though.
Hmm.
I've tried to have some of my kids have a gratitude journal where they only put down things that that's going well, things that is going good in their life. And I think things like that can be really helpful in helping them get out of their depression, out of their woe is me mode, and say, okay, what do I have? Even if it's, I woke up this morning, you know, you woke up. That's great. You got out of bed. Let's move forward from there.
Mm-hmm. I think that's great. Just kind of help them figure out where to focus their energies instead of always dwelling on the negative, that they mm-hmm. can find positive, and helping them try to find that. I think that's a really good idea as well. Okay, Corinne. So, you know, today we're talking about some of these kind of heavier things. Anxiety and depression obviously is one that we hear a lot about that kids are having to deal with. But suicide is also something. And I didn't realize until you and I started talking how serious it really is. And so I think that it is important that our listeners realize how serious this is and what's happening with our children as they are trying to manage these things that they, you know, the world around them. So would you just take a few minutes and just share with us some of the, maybe just start with the statistics of what suicide is looking like, and then maybe we can go from there.
Well, suicide is hard to talk about, and it's hard for counselors to talk about. I mean, it's easier probably because I've had to talk about it so many times, but it is never an easy topic conversation. But when I actually am up for relicensure this year, which means nothing to probably a lot of you, but I had to go through a suicide prevention course, and in that course had these statistics that are just mind-boggling to me. So some of the facts are Utah is sixth in the nation for suicides, and that's suicides across the age from 0 to 100 and whatever, you know. So every age group, we're number 6 in the nation. But the next one is just heartbreaking. Utah is number 1. We are the first in the nation for suicides on ages 10 through 17 year old kids.
Oh my
Isn't
goodness.
That heartbreaking?
That just
number
makes
1
me sick.
Is that where we want to be? No.
No.
That statistic is from 2017, okay? And then just Utah has consistently been above the national average from the years 1999 to 2017. So that's sobering. And then 44 youth age 17 and younger, that's 44, died in 2018 due to suicide. So then if you look at an average class size of, say, 30 kids, so in that classroom of 30 kids, these are approximations, but this is what the statistics show. You will have 10 who will feel sadness or hopeless, 6 students who have seriously considered suicide in the last year, 4 students who have made a plan to take their own life in the last year, and 3 who have actually attempted to take their life. So if you look at those statistics, it's very sobering. It's something that I don't know what Utah needs to do, but there's something that needs to be done. And I just think educating adults about it can be a start, at least.
Wow, that's scary. I know from my own experience when my kids were in high school, for my three younger kids, their high school experience, there was probably a total of four kids in, so that would have been, what, 6 years, that did take their lives. And so I have seen it. I didn't know any of the students personally, but my kids knew them and they were classmates of my kids. And so that is just really crazy. Have you had a personal experience with suicide or experience you could share?
Well, it's a very special experience I've had with one of my students. And this happened, so 3 years ago, I started in my school, and before school started, counselors are at school like 3 weeks before school starts. So during that 3 week period, I had a parent make an appointment and bring her daughter in, who is an incoming seventh grader. So when the parent and the student came in, they shut the door, and the mom proceeded to tell me that her son, my student's older brother, had committed suicide within the month. And it was heartbreaking. The student who had, the boy who had committed suicide was a previous student to our school. He was in plays. He was a star role in plays. His picture was on the hall, in the hallways. And so the family was really worried about this incoming little seventh grade girl, how she would react when she's walking down the hall and sees her, a picture of her brother on the wall, or when a teacher who might remember her brother might say something to her. You know, there's a number of things. And so they were really concerned about how she would do coming into school. So I talked to the student. She became one of my favorite students. Can you have favorites? I don't know, but she did. She has a special place in my heart. Anyway, we made a plan. So she would come into my office every Friday after school. Excuse me, sorry. She would come into my office and just check in. I would just, you know, just let me know how the week went, if there's anything that she needs. And we did that. She would come in for, she probably came in like 5 weeks right after school on Fridays. And then after that, it started getting less and less. And for the rest of the year, I probably saw her 5 to 7 times more. The next school year came, and she came in even less. But she would, anytime I saw her in the hall, she would come and give me a hug and just say, "Hey, Miss Kendall, how are you?" And she was just so happy to see me. And really, all that I did, she would sit in my office and talk. I asked a question and she answered it. She talked. And I did very little talking. And then at the beginning of this school year, it was really special. She has now moved on to the high school. But her younger brother was enrolling. So they brought him in, and she came in to see me also. And she told me how much she loves me, how much she was so grateful for my, for the help I gave her. And in my mind, I'm thinking, I didn't help you with anything. Like, I sat and listened, but that's all she needed. And in talking to her parents without her there, she said that her parents both have said, she talks nonstop about you at home. she loves you. She's so grateful. And as a family, we're so grateful. And they even said, of all our kids, she's handling it the best. She's been able to talk her feelings out and work through it. And so it was really an eye opener that we just need to be a support. We need to be there. We need to ask the right question. And really, all you need to ask is, how are you doing? And don't let them just say, fine. Get to a place of trust with these kids and let them open up and they will talk.
That's so interesting. That is a great story. And, your comment that, you know, sometimes all they need is someone to pay attention to them, to talk to them, to have someone to talk to them. you know, maybe it's this loneliness or maybe it's this anxiety of not thinking they fit in, or these, you know, some of these things that we talked about, the depression of nobody likes me or whatever. And so just a little bit of attention and a listening ear can go a long way.
Yeah.
So what would you tell us, you know, as we might not have children that are dealing with these kind of things, but like you said, I mean, we are a community. We have family members, or we have church members, or we have young women or young men that we are a part of. What kind of things can we be looking for, and what kind of help can we give that might benefit some of these children who are struggling?
Yeah. Well, some of there's a lot, you know, anxiety, depression, all of those things come into play. But if you see someone pulling away, if you recognize someone not wanting to hang out with their friends, choosing to hang out in their room, not coming out with the family, isolation is a huge thing. They create isolation, and then their minds go wild mm-hmm. about thoughts. And so that's a big thing. Losing interest in previous hobbies. If you know someone who has loved playing baseball or, you know, chess or singing or whatever, and they're pulling away from those things and not replacing it with anything else, that's a big sign. Changing friends. If you see them getting involved in with a different group of friends, check out who those friends are. See if that, you know, that may not be a great thing. And another thing is cutting, self-harm. Those are signs of, those are crying out for help. But there is so much cutting and self-harm going on right now. It is so sad. And here, like, you may not see it, but if someone's wearing a long sleeve, a hoodie, and it's 90 degrees outside, that might be a sign that they're trying to cover up their cutting marks. So just pay attention to some of these signs. And as a counselor, if I know someone's been cutting, we get tips all the time. We'll call a student in our office. Generally, the cutting is on the wrist. Pretty easy to have someone lift up their sleeves and check it out. I've seen some fresh cuts and I've seen some scars. So you need to gauge. You need to figure out, is this, if they're fresh, you need to get on that right away. But if they're scarring, it's probably happened a while ago, but they still could use the friendship, the help. Mm-hmm. So those are just different signs that you could look for.
And so say we recognize some of those signs. What are some of the things that we can do to help?
Well, if you suspect someone of suicidal ideation, and that's just a term that we use as counselors, if someone is suicidal, you come right out and ask them. Don't beat around the bush. Don't be afraid to ask. Generally, they're going to be honest. And the question that I always will ask is, are you thinking of hurting yourself? I think that's a little softer than, you know, are you thinking of committing suicide? You know, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But are you thinking of hurting yourself? Do you, and then you need to find out if they say yes, do you have a plan? Ask if what their plan is. If they have a plan, and it's well thought out, they're serious, and they are in dire need at that point. Most kids that I've talked to have no clue, or mm-hmm. they'll say, I've thought about it, you know, and you can kind of tell that they're not really far into it. It's just kind of a passing thought.
Mm-hmm.
But if they have a plan, that's when it's serious. You need to ask them if they have someone if they have an adult to talk to, if they have someone in their life that they've, an adult that they feel comfortable talking to. If the plan is if they have a plan, it's much more serious. So then you need to, like, don't leave their side. Don't leave them until they are in the hands of either a parent or guardian, or you take them to the emergency room, or, you know, you need to get them help if they have that plan. You don't just leave them alone, because that's when it's scary. But really, these thoughts of suicide and stuff, it's a cry for help. And most kids do not want to die. They do not want to die, but they don't see a way out. They don't see how they can make it through this difficult situation. So it's not that they really want to die, but it's that they don't know what else to do. Their minds can't comprehend how to, you know, it's like they don't have the tools in their tool belt. So
yeah,
there's also, just one other thing. There's, I don't know how many have heard of the Safe UT app. And that's, it's an app you can download on your phone, and it's a way to chat online with a licensed therapist. It's 24/7, any time of the day or night. You can text just with that app. You can text people. You can turn in a tip if you suspect someone of having suicidal ideation. The people who monitor this app, they turn in, like, we get tips all the time from kids going to the app, filling it out, and then we will, as a counselor, if it's one of my students, I'll call them down and talk to them. Like, they pass those tips on to their school counselor, to the schools. And if it's serious, they will go to the home of the student. Police officers will go to the home. So that's the best thing to have, is the Safe UT app, or go to the website.
So that's for anyone. That's not just for somebody who needs somebody to talk to. That's for,
no,
I need to report this. I don't know what to do. I'm scared for my friend or for my daughter or son. And, and so you can go to that. Oh, that's interesting. That is a good tip.
Yeah. Awesome. Anyone can use it. So.
Okay. That is a good tip.
And they take it seriously.
Okay. So I will, it's the Safe UT app. I will put that in our show notes too. So if people want to find that, they will be able to find that just by looking at our show notes. So that's great.
Yep.
Okay. Well, so again, you know, we are, all of us, I think, are in positions where we are interacting with children. If they're not our own, they're our neighbors or our family members or our church or community members. How serious is this? I mean, you've kind of talked about it. It's pretty serious, particularly here in Utah. But is there something else that we can do, or as parents, you know, what can we do to help?
Well, I think the biggest thing is, don't be afraid to talk to kids about this. Each one of these, each one of you listeners, you're going to have interactions with kids, with adults, people who are crying out for help. So, like, each of you are leaders. You're leaders in your community, in church settings, in your family, with nieces, nephews, cousins, aunts and uncles. Like, you come in touch with a lot of people. At home, you have your children. Your children's friends come over to talk. I have a story of a mom who called me a couple months ago, and she said, I don't even want to give you my daughter's name. I don't want her name attached to this, but her friend came over and said this, and I am worried. like this neighbor's mom called me to turn in, to give her worries to me so that I could look into it. I was so grateful because that is someone who, you know, and I don't say who let me know, but it's just a way for us to recognize needs. So as you're out and about, if you have your kids' friends in your home and maybe they say something, you overhear a conversation, you can call the school counselor and they can look into this. It kind of gets it off of your shoulders and gets it into the hands of someone who has the resources to help. But based on the numbers, I'm pretty sure suicide has reached pretty much everyone in the United States, the household, whether it's a family member, a neighbor, like Leslie, like you said, kids in the school, mm-hmm. Classmates. Just a couple months ago, we had a 21-year-old boy in our state who committed suicide. It was devastating. This kid was, his dad was the bishop. Like just a well-known family. And it's heartbreaking. And what impact that has on kids in their ward, mm-hmm. you know, who knew this kid very closely, it really had some strong impacts. So it really is, it's touching everyone, mm-hmm. whether you want to believe it or not.
You know, I just, I'm sitting here thinking nobody's immune. You can't assume that everything is great and that won't happen to you or won't happen to someone that you know or someone that you love. And so I think it behooves all of us to be aware of the signs and to be aware of things. And I appreciate you giving that suggestion. I would never have thought to call the school and just talk to a school counselor and say, hey, I'm worried about this friend of my child's, mm-hmm. or even my own child. Is there something that you can do? That's great. And your idea of, you know, giving it to people who know how to handle the situation. If you don't feel comfortable in talking to yourself or doing that, pass it on to somebody who would. So that's great advice, Corinne. So, you know, sometimes there's things that we can do to help. Sometimes it happens that it's not a part of anything that we could have controlled. And so there's no judgment on, you know, parents. If this happens in your home or, you know, no. I don't want parents to feel like they are responsible because they weren't doing enough to keep their child from having this happen or, there are certain things too that can help create a home environment that is, that can do as much as it possible to help our children be safe and to have, the skills that they need. And so quickly just tell us what would be a few of those things that we can be doing in our homes to help do what we can.
Well, first off, I want to reiterate what Leslie just said. If you have a child that has committed suicide, this is absolutely no reflection on your parenting skills. Absolutely not. Like it has nothing to do with that because some kids, that's what they're prone to do. Okay. But with that being said, there are things that you can do to help the kids feel safe and secure. One thing I would say is create an environment where your kids feel comfortable talking to you. I think if they can talk to you about their day, about things like that, they're more likely to open up and share maybe some of these. And even if they're not opening up about this, if you have that connection, you may be able to more easily recognize the changes that are coming mm-hmm. to your child. So just the line of communication. One thing that I believe it was President Packer, but someone once said, if one of my kids ever had a question, I stopped what I did and I focused on them and answered it. Because if your kid is asking a question, they are generally in the mindset of learning. They are wanting to learn something if they're asking the question. And I have to let everyone know I am far from perfect with what I'm saying here. Okay. Far from perfect. It's much easier to say these things than actually do them. Mm-hmm. But I do think that just being present with your kid, knowing what they like and giving them praises and, put your phone down. I think that alone can give, you know, if your kid is coming to you and you're texting a friend, and what if your conversation with your friend is super serious? Your kid doesn't know that. All they see is that you're ignoring them and you're texting your friend.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe at that point it's time to, okay, I know it's serious. Maybe text them. I will get back with you soon. But take time for those kids, because they grow up, they move on, and you will never have that time back.
Thank you, Corinne. You know, you and I are at that stage where our kids are growing up and they're leaving, and we recognize how quickly that time has flown by. And I know that there's some of our listeners that are in the throes of having all their kids at home, and it's so busy and so crazy. And you just think, I can't wait for some peace and quiet.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that you, can recognize that there's a time and a season. And I remember those times as being difficult and being hard and not having time, feeling like you have a time to listen to every one of your children. But I can also agree with Corinne that that doesn't stay forever, and those kids are going to grow up, mm-hmm. and leave, and you want them to be prepared to meet the world that they have to live in. And unfortunately, the world now is much more difficult to live in than it was even when we were growing up. And so as parents, it really does behoove us to be intentional in what we are teaching and how we are creating the environments that our kids are living in. And I think that we just have to make sure that we're doing all we can to give our children the tools that they need. All right, Corinne, is there anything else that you want to share with us before we wrap this up?
Oh, well, I mean, I've shared most of what I've thought about. I just want to thank Leslie for giving me this opportunity. It's given me a chance to really dive deeper into, for one, my philosophy, how I feel. Hopefully I can be a better school counselor because of some of these things that we've discussed. I think that I love your word intentional. I think if we can be intentional in what we do, what we say, our actions, our deeds, our what we do, I think we will be led to do the right thing. And a lot of times, if you don't know, if you feel like you need to talk to someone, you don't know what to say, just start talking.
Mm-hmm.
It comes. Like, it probably you will say the right thing just by opening your mouth. Don't shy away from some of these hard things. It's easy to say, oh, someone else will notice that. Someone else will help this child. But that someone else may never come along. So I hope that you will be intentional in your actions.
Thanks, Corinne. You've been really helpful and enlightening on some really important topics that aren't always fun to hear about, but I think that it's important that we as parents understand these things so that we can be aware of how to help our own children as well as those others that we come in contact with. So thank you for taking your time to be with us and sharing your ideas and your thoughts with us. I really do appreciate it. Thanks everybody for joining us. Remember, your teaching matters, and we will see you next week. Bye everybody.